Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to The Poisoner's Cabinet. I'm Sinead.
And I'm Nick.
And this is your weekly podcast exploring the lives of the great poisoners and macabre murders from across the centuries and creating curious cocktails inspired by the tales that we tell. And it's episode 121.
No,
it's the Roaring Twenties, Nick. We're roaring. Into the Roaring Twenties. There's fringe as far as the eye can see.
Fringes. Can't see anything. Just fringes.
There's flappers and cowboys.
And we're Charlestoning all over the place.
Can you imagine the fringe flaying as you Charleston?
Imagine the devastation you would cause as you go by people.
My eye!
Like a whirling dervish. Just one of those grass strimmers just like cutting people down as you Charleston by them.
Or like a very, very budget car wash.
Depends how many bees you had.
You see, that no one talks about this from the 20s. No one talks about the injuries that were incurred in the Charleston competitions. How are you, Nick?
Am I?
You're okay? You're on tenterhooks, aren't you?
I've got a whole week off. Luxury.
This is nothing to anyone who's listening. Nah, but to you, it's just everything.
It's everything. It should be everything to everyone. I've got a week off.
Can we come around?
No. No one can come around. I'm not seeing anyone. I'm not leaving the house. Bolting the doors. Barring the windows.
Until you ring me and say, I forgot to get supplies.
Yeah.
Bring me.
Bring me cake and another bottle of gin, then go away.
Do you remember when we were young and we were like, oh, week off, I'm going to spend a weekend in Palmer and then I'm going to go out clubbing and I'm going to explore all these things and I might go here, I might go there. Now it's like, I am bolting the doors and doing nothing.
No, I don't. I have never done that. I have never done that and I never will do that and I never want to do that. It sounds dreadful.
Shut up, I'm trying to make us sound cool, man.
There's none of that.
You've set your stall.
I've set my stall. I'm going to be grumpy. I might go and see an exhibition in an art gallery in a sort of vaguely pretentious sort of I'm going to be cultured in my week off and then sit at McDonald's. I've got grand ideas. I'm going to go to London. I'm going to go to the British. There's a good exhibition at the British Museum I want to see. I might go there. I might walk to the V&A. I like their theatre exhibition. I might go there.
Because in England, you can do that. We are but an hour away in the train from some of the finest museums and theatres in the world, really.
I could go up on Wednesday. I could do a matinee.
But you're not going
to. But I'm not going to do any of it. No. But I like thinking of the possibilities if I wasn't sitting down eating snacks.
You're going to swill in a groan and going, I'm so cultured just because I thought of this.
I thought of these things. What can I get delivered? I'm now going to watch Downton Abbey for the 12th time.
Any poisonings this week ahead of your week off in preparation?
I don't know, could have been. I've been very busy preparing for the week off.
Yes, your brain has gone.
Brain has been preoccupied with, mainly with trying to think of things of people to do when I'm not there.
So I can for your work.
Lists. Yes, for your work. So I give them lists. Do these things. These are the things that you need to do.
Yes, you do this for work. You don't do it to your friends.
No.
You don't gather us at the pub and say, here is a list of things I wish you to do this week while I will not see you.
I think that's a good, damn good idea, though. I'm going to be writing notes. Right, I'm off for a week. These are the things I expect you to do while I'm off.
Are they things in your memory or are they just
in
things
my memory?
That you
Where
want
am I going?
Well, we're not going to see you for a week. You may as well be dead.
Right, okay. So we're going to...
Okay, not in your memory. Okay, we're not
going to
kill
in
you.
My honour.
In your honour. In your name.
In my name.
In the name of Nick. In the name of Nick. What are we being sent out to do?
Ah, buy me a sandwich.
There's never been a more noble quest.
Mainly it involves bringing me food.
The serfs will be sent out to scuttle.
And I may have drunk all the gin by then, so you better buy some more gin.
Wonderful. Well, speaking of making your friends be your servants and being alone in your castle, being an ogre, apparently, I think it's time for us to thank our delicious Patreon subscribers.
Aw, can I get a drawbridge with Patreon money?
Yes.
Excellent. Along with my cannons.
This is what you're paying for, people.
Excellent. Oh, as you said, I live in my castle. And now I want a castle.
Yeah. It's not to support wonderful creative artists who are just trying to make a living and to entertain you. No, it's basically paraphernalia so Nick can fulfill his dream of being the selfish giant.
Oh, I like it.
Well, you thank the people who have enabled
absolutely.
This.
But yes, you have enabled it. So you're all your own fault, really. Thank you very much to Janique.
To Madara Hemlock.
And to HLRB.
Thank you so much, you delicious, sexy subscribers.
That's 346 of a cannon.
Oh, do cannons come in 46?
They come in 46. You've got to build them yourself. It's like those old magazines you used to get. Like, build the Death Star in 6 million parts. Only $4.99 a part. And it's like, oh, this is very expensive.
Your cannon delivery.
Cannon deliveries.
Well, Nick, are you ready?
Nope.
To drink cocktails. And talk about poison.
Oh, good to...
We could drink some poison and talk about cocktails.
Okay.
Okay to both.
Yes.
Good. Whatever happens, happens.
Whatever happens, happens.
Okay, you're open to possibilities. Should we go with the first one?
Yes, let's do that.
Yes, drink cocktails, talk about poison.
Marvellous, sounds like a plan.
Hooray, hooray, hooray. It is Nick's story this week, but as you know, we can't possibly have a story without a cocktail in hand. As you know, dear listeners, every week we choose a secret ingredient that is inspired by the tale that we tell, and it will flavour our cocktail of the week. Nick's story, so his pick. And Nick, the secret ingredient this week is
chess.
Chess.
Lovely intellectual ingredient.
The sport of kings. No, that's horse racing.
That's horse racing.
What's chess?
It's chess mainly.
The Queen's Gambit.
Yes.
It's a
chess
play
thing.
In the chessness of the chess. I don't know how.
I can tell you know it well.
I don't know how to chess.
No, right.
I do not chess.
I do not chess either.
No, I don't. I think as a child.
Yeah, I know the moves
badly
of the chess.
Do you?
I know how to play the chess, but I'm not good at the chess. So I'm not good at the strategy of the chess.
Yes, it's all about strategy.
I know which bits move where and how they move, but that's about it.
Yes, everyone knows that.
Yes, well, I do. Well, that's you can play chess. I cannot play it well.
So chess.
Chess involved.
Oh, interesting. And now is chess an ingredient? Interesting. I don't know. Are we going to be served up some sort of pawn in a glass? A bishop, perhaps?
A bishop.
A castle or a rook or a knight clip-clopping its way across the board?
Clippity-clop.
Towards your drink. Towards to vanquish it. What have you come up with?
Oh, see, now I know you're going to shout at me again.
I am probably,
really
yeah.
Really going to shout at me. What do you think? When you think about chess, what do you think about chess?
I think about chess. That's what
do you
what
think?
I think
no,
about.
But what are the aspects of chess?
Pieces on a board.
Okay, and what about what's about those pieces? About that board?
I think that strategy, a checkerboard.
Okay, well, I'm going to get a shout out for this one. We are having a black and white daiquiri.
What?
The pieces are black and white.
Are you
and the
kidding?
Board is a black and white.
Are you kidding me?
No.
A black and white daiquiri.
A black and white
from
daiquiri.
Chess.
From chess.
You just took chess and then you went 7 stops down the train line to get to black and white.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. I thought it was brilliant.
Is it just because you wanted to try this thing?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you went anything, black and white, chess. Yeah, there we are.
That's exactly how it went.
Oh, I feel like there's so much that's been missed out. Are there not bishop or knight or queen or king cocktails?
Well, there was... Not really. There was a Queen Elizabeth and Queen Mary and Queen this and I thought that's not really chessy.
No, I think checkerboard or
no. Sort of no, I didn't come across any checkerboardy one. There was a couple of bishop ones, but I wasn't particularly inspired by those. They seemed a bit meh. Oh, I thought black and white chess pieces. It's tough because that's what I have. So
I mean, yeah, I've got
you have no choice in the matter. So you can huff and puff all you like.
I like a black and white animal, so. That's okay. And that's if we're going to crowbar in the tenuous references.
A zebra comes along. There's a zebra in there as well if you want.
Yay!
No, it's not. I lied.
Oh, boo, Nick. So chess, black and white. A black and white daiquiri. I'm intrigued. Okay, Nick. I think you should make your move into the poisonous cabinet kitchen and shake up a storm. So we'll see you in a minute.
We'll see you in a bit.
And we're back.
Hello.
So, Nick. Black and white daiquiri. I, you know what? Maybe I will just push this rage down deep inside of me and move on from it. Maybe I'll move on.
Move on from the rage.
Yes, that's good practice. A black and white
daiquiri.
Yeah.
I have notes.
You always have notes. You always have notes.
It looks beautiful.
It looks very smart.
I love the colour, but it's neither black nor white.
Yeah, I was hoping it would be darker.
Now, I'm going to venture a guess as to one of the ingredients in this.
Possibly. Could you?
Mainly because we went to picking for them earlier on.
We did raid
the shrubberies of Canterbury earlier on Nick's instruction for some blackberries.
Blackberries.
And they're surprisingly early in season this year. So if there's not blackberries in this, I'm not sure what you made me do out there.
Yeah, I just made you run around for a bit.
The hilarious part of that is we went out to the hedgerow near Nick's house right at the moment that a bunch of Cub Scouts turned up to go blackberry picking. And
I don't know if they, I don't know if they were there to go blackberry picking. We were there picking blackberries, and like the scout or the leader chappy said, "Oh look, there's blackberries! Everyone, come and get blackberries!" And we're inundated by children picking blackberries. They're my fucking blackberries.
Either that guy stole our idea and was really flailing for things to do with those scouts. He was like, "Yes, blackberry picking. Let's just harm the children in these brambles." Or we took a lot of the blackberries those children were excited to pick for that day, and we were there, two grown adults, shoving them out of the way, going, "No, that's one mine. That's for our booze."
I think we had better use of them. So,
I think those kids threw them on the ground later to then go on their TikToks and their vapes. All 9-year-olds.
They were like seven.
But we have blackberries definitely in the drink. I'm not going to guess anymore. Let's dive in, shall we? Okay. Smells fruity. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas indeed.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's tart. Tart as you would expect from a blackberry. Oh, you're happy.
I'm very happy.
Oh, you're very happy.
I like that a lot.
Oh, it's really sharp. It's good. Oh, the flavours.
there's stuff going on there.
The flavours are coming through, Nick. Oh, yes, I can taste the blackberries, but I can taste other things.
Yeah.
I'm glad. Good things.
Good things.
Good things. Well, I'm going to venture that the daiquiris, it's got rum.
Yep.
Rum. There's a perfume to it, Nick. There's a perfume that I'm intrigued by. Slightly aroused.
I like this.
Yeah, it's really good. I mean, anything with good, fresh, foraged fruit in it is right up my alley. It just really taps into my witchy shenanigans.
It's a good summary one, that.
You know what? I'm going to...
What are you going to do?
I'm going to offer an opinion.
Okay. It's always dangerous.
It's right on the line of being too flowery and too sweet.
Well, you're wrong.
It's on the right line, but it's reminding me of Fruits of the Forest yogurts. And Fruits of the Forest kind of ice creams. They're good. It's not quite there, but it's right on the line. It's really reminding me of that, but it's not too sweet. So talk us through it, Nick.
So yeah, so daiquiri. So yes, rum, but two types of rum.
Oh, okay.
We have a white rum.
Yes.
And then we have a coconut rum.
What?
Can you not taste the coconut?
Well, now you've said it.
There's a coconut twang.
Hang on a minute. It's just so sharp with the berries. Honestly, I wouldn't put that down to coconut.
And I don't
want to smell it. I can't smell anything, you know. I can't really smell coconut.
No. Or perhaps it's me because I know it's in there. But
yes.
In my brain, I can smell. So we've got white rum. We have a coconut rum.
Yes. A first.
Two firsts this week.
Okay.
Two firsts. We have some blackberries that we did indeed go a picking. I've been all squished in the bottom. There's some lime juice. And as you would expect in daiquiri. There's some sugar. We also have a creme de mer,
so blackberry liqueur.
Blackberry liqueur as
Yay!
Well.
Oh, yes.
So I had to go out and buy a blackberry liqueur and coconut rum just for this recipe, and I'm very upset by that. So now I can make brambles, which is very upsetting.
Woo!
Yeah, lots of new things, and I really like it. I think it's absolutely lovely.
That is lovely. Hello, I'm drunk, though. That has really suddenly hit me. I'm like, whoa. Oh, no, there was a lot of alcohol at once, and it's delicious. And yes, you could drink that fast and
have another.
Be anyone's, which I may well be in 5 minutes.
I think that's really, really nice.
I'm really happy by it.
Really pleased with that.
Mm. I have a theory about coconut rum, that it always makes you giggly and smiley and happy. It makes you smile and makes you giggly. Oh, everything's warm and fuzzy. Something about coconut rum, it does it. Some people may be vomiting in their shoes right now. But you've got all smiley.
No, I love it. I absolutely love it. I think it's great.
I need to give you more of these so you're less mean to me. Because you seem like the world is like your oyster now. Or you're going to pet kittens and puppies.
Where's the absinthe? Give me the absinthe.
Yes. This bodes well for a horrible murder story. But yeah, that's that perfume aftertaste. With the coconut and the blackberry.
I want another one.
You really, really like this. I don't think I've ever seen Nick like this.
I haven't finished this one, but I want another one.
This has been a while since I've seen Nick so giggly and gleeful. Oh, I'm worried about how you're going to read the story now. It's going to be like an episode of Jack and Ori, isn't
it? And they all died horribly.
Yay! And they skipped through the fields.
Of dead people.
Okay, so the black and white daiquiri.
Yeah.
I have suppressed the rage with coconut rum that black and white chess somehow have mashed together to make this acceptable, with our black and white daiquiris firmly in hand as we skip through a field of lollipops and sunshine and rainbows and blackberries and get torn to pieces, apparently. Do you have a story for us, Nick?
I do most certainly have a story.
Woohoo!
A very exciting story. We have a mystery, a great miscarriage of justice.
Ooh.
And the case remains unsolved to this day.
No, surely not.
A case whose intricacies are still taught during police training over 90 years later.
I like it.
Yes, very exciting. It is 1931.
Good, I'm on board.
Excellent. 1931, and we meet William Herbert Wallace and his wife, Julia. Now, William and Julia have been married around 16 years or so, and they live an entirely respectable middle-class life in Liverpool in England.
Ooh, Liverpool. Oh, Liverpool. Oh, nice. We haven't been there in a while.
No, indeed. William works for the Prudential Assurance Company.
Oh, yes. As, still going today.
Yeah, well, indeed. Absolutely. As an insurance collector. He has his little patch in Liverpool, and he will go around introducing himself to the new residents, selling his policies, collecting his weekly premiums that they pay. And he is a very nice chap by all accounts. And Prudential Assurance, the company, has an outstanding reputation this time. It's reliable and honest. And William himself is known as an absolute gentleman around town. And everyone who spoke about him gives him a glowing, glowing reference. Now, Julia is equally as well regarded as her husband. She doesn't work, so she enjoys painting. She's a very gifted artist. For her paintings adorn the walls in their home. She's also a very talented pianist. And the pair are known to give little concerts to their friends.
Oh,
with,
my God, I love
with
them.
Julia on the piano and William on the violin. William less good on the violin, but he gives it a good go.
I also love the fact that Nick did a gesture for a violin that looked like a ukulele.
He could have been playing the violin nice. You never know.
Yes, he wasn't very good on the violin because he was playing it like a guitar. Yeah. And Julia was really covering for it with loud piano. Yeah.
Neighbours who had known the Wallaces for over 10 years said they had never heard a cross word or raised voice between the couple. Hmm. Which is why what came next left many desperately shocked. On the evening of the 19th of January, 1931, William went out to a meeting of the Liverpool Chess Club.
Chess!
he is a semi-regular member there, and that evening he is scheduled to play in a friendly tournament. Not overly regular, but he has been a member there for about 8 years. Mm. Sometimes he's there 3 or 4 evenings a week, and then other times he's not seen for a month. But he's known around the place. That evening, he actually very nearly decided against going. Julia was a bit poorly at the time, and he didn't want to leave his wife. But she was like, no, go, I'll be fine. Go and enjoy yourself. Go and play some chess. He had himself had only just gotten over the flu, but he's like, no, get out. Go and have a nice time. Leave me alone.
That's a good, healthy relationship.
Absolutely. And so there he was at the club. Now, just as he is about to start his game, Samuel Beattie, the captain of the club, comes over to him with a note. Now, Samuel tells William that the club had received a phone call earlier that evening when he wasn't in. Samuel had tried to tell the caller that he didn't know when William would next be in, but the man on the phone had been quite insistent about leaving a message. And here he was. What a bit of luck that he is there that evening. Now, the note was from a Mr. R. M. Qualtroff.
Who and the what now?
Mr. R.M. Qualtroff.
Qualtroff? That's
Qualtroff.
An interesting name.
Indeed it is. Mr. Qualtroff, in his call, had stated that he wanted to purchase an insurance policy through William, and would William please do him the courtesy of visiting him the following evening at his home at 25 Menlove Gardens East.
Okay. Menlove Gardens?
Menlove Gardens.
Menlove Gardens.
Yeah.
I'm just going to leave that there.
Yeah, I know you are. It comes up a lot. So if you're going to giggle, get it out of your system.
I mean, there's so much we could do.
This is Men Love Gardens East, by the way.
Oh, East. East. The West was a place of degradation.
Now, William thought this was all very odd. He had never heard of Mr. Qualtrough before. But why?
I don't think anyone has.
No. Why wouldn't this man contact William through the office to set up an appointment? Why risk leaving a message at his chess club? How did he know he was a member of the chess club?
Oh, yes. As you said, he was irregular.
He's irregular. William takes the details down, writes them in his little diary, and then sits down to his game of chess, which he wins quite comfortably.
Good for him.
The next day, William leaves home around 10:30 a.m. as usual to start his rounds, collecting his insurance premiums from his various customers, introducing him to new people who have moved in, and he visits with people, he has a nice cup of tea. He returns home around 6 p.m. that evening, again exactly as would be expected, and has a bite to eat with Julia just before heading out to visit the mystery Mr. Qualtrough. The first problem, though, was where was Men Love Gardens East? Supposedly it is in the Mossley Hill area of Liverpool in the south of the city. But going through the directories, he cannot find any such address. There is Men Love Avenue.
Right.
And off Men Love Avenue, you've got Men Love Gardens north, south and west, but no east.
No east.
No Men Love East.
It just sounds like a made-up name that you've just said. Men Love Gardens. Why did I say that?
No.
This is very confusing.
Yeah. Well, the address he has been given apparently does not exist. But he thinks, well, it must be around there somewhere. Perhaps it's a little street, little alleyway or something.
Yes.
Or it's a new build. It's not made into directories or something. So, but it's going to be in that general area. He'll head there and he'll find out. He'll talk to someone. He'll get directions. It'll be fine.
If you've got north, south and west, all you have to do is like by process of elimination.
Exactly. It's going to be in that neck of the woods, isn't it?
Men Love hasn't been practiced around here for 10 years. No, I'm just looking for a street. Oh, sorry.
William jumps on a tram and made his way down to Mossley Hill. He asked the tram driver if he knew of this unknown Men Love Gardens East or even of Mr. Qualtrough, but no luck in that at all. It takes him three changes of trams to get to the area, and he gets off, no one knowing anything about this Gardens East address.
Is he asking everyone on
the
tram?
He's asking everyone, absolutely. He's three different tram drivers. He's asking them all, do you know where this address is? Can you let me know where I should get off of this address? It's not an area he knew particularly well.
Okay.
Everyone said, no, sorry, Gov, I don't know about it, but it's probably going to be around there somewhere. So he gets off in the area he assumes it to be. There is still no sign. He walks up and down a bit, can't find anything. He asks a local news agent. No, sorry, don't know anything. He finds a police officer and asks a police officer for help in locating this address. He cannot help either. As far as he knows, there is no such address.
It's a ghost address.
It's a ghost address. What he does do, he goes to 25 Men Love Gardens West, well, thinking perhaps there's been a mistake in the hearing of the message.
Yeah,
in the
west, east.
East, west, something like that. So he goes there. But the occupant, Miss Mather, has never heard of a Mr. Qualtrough. No, there's no one here of that name. Hmm. Never has been. I've been here for years. Not a clue.
Mr. Qualtrough's been dead for 10 years.
He wanders around a bit more. Apparently the North and South streets only have even numbers. So there's no 25 on them at all. So he is entirely perplexed about what is going on with this.
Okay.
After 45 minutes to an hour of wandering the streets searching, William says, I'll bugger this. And he decides to head home.
We shouldn't have to say it, but oh, the dark, dark days before Google Maps.
Yeah, he's like, no Google Maps, no mobile. Can't just give him a call and say, where are you, mate?
And if your job is to go door to door to make your living, to get your wages, then you are going to spend the time doing it.
Exactly. If he sells a policy, he's going to get a commission out of it. So it's not an opportunity he can pass up.
Indeed.
But he has had no luck. So he decides, right, enough's enough. Off I go. It's around 8:40 by the time William actually gets home, 8:40 in the evening. Okay. And he's really rather frustrated by this sort of wasted journey. As he goes to open the front door, he finds it locked. It's bolted from the inside. Now, this is quite unusual. Julia knew that even if she'd gone to bed, she knew that he was coming back at some point. He tries knocking, but there was no answer. As I say, he assumes that Julia must have had an early night, just done it automatically and forgotten. So he goes to the back door. Again, door is locked. As he is knocking on the back door, trying to rouse his wife, who he assumes has gone to bed, he sees his neighbours, John and Florence Johnston, walking along the back path on their way out. William stops them and asks if they had heard anything unusual that evening. He explains that he can't get back into the house again, and Julia wasn't answering, and he was starting to get a bit worried about what was going on. Now, John replies that they've not heard anything. They've been in all evening. They're only just leaving now. They've not heard anything odd. They've not seen anything odd. He suggests that William tries the back door again. If no luck, he's got a spare key. John has got a spare key. If it's stuck, he'll go and get the key and see what they can do.
That's shit advice as well. Like, I've got a spare key, but try it again.
Try it again. Well,
I'm sure you weren't turning your own door handle properly.
Well, he tries it again. The door opens.
Oh, God, that was good advice. No one listened to me.
Yeah.
No, what? Why does it open? What? I don't like this. Why does it open?
The door opens without complaint, without a fuss. Door swings open.
What?
The Johnsons wait outside. William goes in to make sure everything is as it should be. Everything's okay. Julia's tucked up in bed, completely oblivious. So they all is well.
They've seen him open the door.
They've seen him open the door. They're now standing right in his back garden. And so, yeah, they've seen him. The door's open. And they will wait outside. You go and just give us a yell that everything's okay and we'll carry on and blah, all shall be well. John remembered he could hear William calling out for Julia in the house, asking if she was okay. But there was no response. He also remembers that he could see the lights go on in the house as he was going room to room, turning lights on, lighting matches to get the gas going. As William pushes the parlour door open, he sees Julia lying on the floor. Now, in the dark, his initial thought was she's taken a fall. She's had a seizure or she's had a fit or something and collapsed. He rushes to the other side of the room where the gas tap is to light gas lighting. And as the room fills with light, William, to his horror, sees Julia, her skull smashed open and blood and brains oozing out all over the floor. He cries out in horror at what he's seen, and John Johnson, who's been waiting outside, comes rushing in to see what's going on, confronted by this gruesome scene in the parlour. John ushers William out of the room and tells him and his wife not to touch anything, and he legs it out of the house to go and find a police officer, go and alert the authorities about what's happened. William and Florence settle in the kitchen while they wait for the arrival of the authorities. In the kitchen, Florence notices that a cabinet door is broken on the floor. And she points it out to William, tells her that that is where he keeps his insurance collection tin. So the money he has collected during the day is usually kept in that cupboard. And going to look, he finds the tin empty. John Johnston reappears, saying that the police are on their way. They've been told to wait. Florence explains about the missing money and the damaged cabinet. And John urges William to go and look around the rest of the house. Is anything else out of place? And is anything else missing? William does so. He's sort of in a bit of a daze and he does what he's told. And he goes upstairs and he returns saying that everything seems to be in order. There's a few pounds in a pot that was there. The money's still there. Nothing's been gone through and rifled through. It doesn't look like anything has been touched. The first on the scene is a constable, Williams, who takes one look in the parlour and goes, nope. I think it's probably best to wait till the superiors to get here for that one.
Oh, bless Constable Williams. Yep. He was probably rocking up going, don't worry, I'm made of sterner stuff, boys, and let me handle this. Okay. Yeah.
Pretty much exactly how it is. And he goes,
his superiors turn up and go, you didn't let him in there, did you? God, this is your last warning about throwing up all over crime scenes.
So instead, the constable takes William around the house to see what's what, and William points out the broken cabinet in the kitchen, the missing insurance money, and then up in the bedroom where money has been left in the pot. The rest of the house seems entirely undisturbed, really. Just that one room, the parlour, and the kitchen. Soon there is a host of police officers, doctors, forensic specialists. Everyone is descended upon the house. The parlour is searched through, rummaged through, and again, nothing seems to be missing, really. Nothing is out of place at all. The attack must have been so swift and brutal that there was no time for a fight or any resistance. There was nothing overturned or anything like that. Blood spatter arcs 7 foot up the walls, covering paintings and photographs. The only one slightly unusual thing was that Julia's body was lying on top of a Macintosh coat, an outdoor jacket. She wasn't wearing it, but she was like lying on top of it. So they think, well, perhaps she had been carrying it when she was attacked and fell onto it. Maybe perhaps she had been had come in carrying the coat, or was just about to go out with the coat, or was just moving the coat around the house and had been spotted. But she was lying on an outdoor coat, which was something unusual. A post-mortem examination of Julia revealed that she had received 11 vicious strikes to the head with a blunt object, and the blows had been strong enough to crush her skull.
Frenzied attack.
Absolutely. Friends say blood all up the walls, swinging around the place. Yeah. So really violent, really frenzied.
You're making sure she's dead. You're not just knocking her out.
Absolutely. Now, investigators waste no time at all in making William Herbert Wallace the number one suspect. Husband, he must have done it. From the very outset, they are convinced that he is responsible.
On one hand, closest to home, we've seen it many times. Oh, absolutely. Husband, you must have done it. That's convenient. But also...
Mm. Yeah, no, they are exactly that frame of mind. The husband must have done it for some reason that we don't know yet, but the husband must have done it.
Yes, but the law of averages says it's going to be someone you know.
Well, quite. William tries to explain that he's been out of the house all evening. He's been on the hunt for this elusive Mr. Qualtroff. He couldn't have and had no reason for killing his wife. But the police are adamant. No, it's you. It was definitely you. they believe that the appointment with Mr. Qualtroff was just a ruse.
Yeah.
A flimsy alibi that Williams, he must have given himself. He must have provided himself. The police, in fact, confirm that there was no Men Love Gardens East. It does not exist. It never has existed, ever, in Liverpool. There is no Mr. Qualtroff, either.
No.
There is no such man in all of Liverpool.
I think we all knew that.
But now it is confirmed. And they are sure that this has been a scam. Now, William explained about that the message had been received at the chess club. And using this detail, the police were able to ascertain that the call to the club requesting this appointment had been made from a phone box just 400 yards from the Wallace house. William must have left the message himself, they think.
Really?
To give himself an alibi.
I mean, it's one very good theory.
it's
I'm
the
very
theory.
Split down the middle
it's,
right
it's
now.
It's the theory they went with. This they had no other theories in mind.
He gives himself an alibi. He leaves a message. He turns up at his club and someone, oh, yeah, oh, okay, I've got this message. I'll go out and see these people. It's clever.
It's clever. But.
But.
There are witnesses to William being miles and miles and miles away that evening, the other side of town. He's ridden three different trams to get to Mossley Hill. He's bought tickets from all these tram drivers. And then in his search for Men Loves Gardens East, he has spoken to residents. He's spoken to a news agency. He's spoken to a police officer.
Yeah.
All these people who confirmed they had indeed spoken to William Wallace on the other side of town that evening.
Okay.
You don't sound convinced by this.
My question would be, what was the time of death? If you want to give yourself an alibi, don't you want to make yourself very, very publicly seen and known in the place where the murder is not happening?
Well, that's exactly what seems to have been happening. A slight spanner in the works was thrown into the police theory. They find a milk delivery boy, Alan Close. Alan for a boy. He comes forward to say that he had actually seen Julia and spoken to her alive and well when he delivered the milk that evening, around 6:45.
Okay.
6:45 that evening on the day of the murder.
Right.
Now, as the police dig deeper into this timeline, as you suggest, they find that the earliest confirmed sighting of William anywhere outside the house is on the tram, the second tram. Driver there remembers him well. And that was about 7:05.
So it's impossible.
So Julia was seen alive at 6:45, was swiftly murdered by her husband, who got two trams across Liverpool to Mossley Hill, all within 20 minutes.
No.
Now, the walk from the Wallace house to the nearest tram stop was about 4 minutes. Not a problem, the police said. Not a problem at all.
What?
It can easily be done. And they went on to prove it. They found the fittest, most athletic police officer throughout Liverpool.
Who wasn't even a police officer. They just drafted in a cross-country runner.
Yeah, and they gave him the task of recreating this route. And to be fair to the man, he did it.
For 4 minutes.
They allowed a few minutes to hypothetically bludgeon his wife, stage a robbery, and clean himself up. The officer then sprinted out of the Wallace house and jumped on a moving tram, which had just taken off from the stop. That's fine. Proof it could be done. This young 20-year-old can do it. 52-year-old William Wallace, who had just got over the flu,
yeah,
wouldn't have been a problem for him. He could have recreated this athletic feat, not a problem at all, and being completely nonplussed. Everyone who saw him said, oh, he looks like he was just bumbling around the place. He wasn't out of breath or dishevelled or anything like that.
Completely normal.
Completely normal.
They probably made the young athletic cop kill someone as well to really do it. I don't want to. Yeah. No, we need the adrenaline up so you'll run faster.
Yeah, but they were convinced that William could have done it in the same timing as this 20-year-old officer. They are entirely unmoved by arguments against their case. And 2 weeks after Julia's death, William Wallace is charged with her murder.
Okay, this feels like a good place to get another drink to steady our nerves.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
In front of the jury, the prosecution claimed that on the 19th of January, William Wallace had placed the call to the chess club himself. Mm-hmm. He had disguised his voice to leave the message from the made-up Mr. Qualtrough. How else, the police claim, would the caller possibly know that William was going to be in that evening? He was a very hit-and-miss visitor, but obviously someone knew that he was going to be there. Who else would know but William himself? Then the next day, William said his goodbyes to Julia, and then he waited. He hid around the corner and waited for milk boy Alan Close to arrive to provide that witness statement that Julia was alive and well at 6:45. He needed someone to have seen her alive. Yeah. And as soon as Alan had completed his delivery, William re-entered the house where he stripped off his clothing, put on a Macintosh, and then naked underneath his Macintosh, moved towards the parlour where he bashed Julia to death, apparently with the fire poker, which was found to be missing from the house. Now, the Mac had taken most of the inevitable spatter and blood and gore and everything that was going on. So Williams then stripped off the Mac and rolled Julia's body on top of it. Mm. Now, the theory was perhaps he was going to try and move her, try and drag her away at all using the Mac. But whatever didn't happen, it was just left there. He then gets himself cleared up, gets dressed calmly, takes a stroll to the tram stop to start his journey, creating his alibi. Experts refute this entirely. While this may be a plausible sequence of events, it would have taken considerably longer than the time he had to do this. The police had allowed 2 or 3 minutes to get into the house, murder his wife, stage a robbery, clean himself up, and get out of the house. That does not happen in 2 minutes.
No.
That does not happen. But the police said, yeah, he's fine. He could have done it.
It's absolutely possible. Oh, it's like Serial, this.
The chess club captain, Samuel, also testifies that the voice on the phone, it's not William. There's no electronic disguising. It was a man going, hello, it's me. I'm not William. It was not William on the phone. He knew William's voice.
And if someone else was going, hello, it's me, like, what's wrong with your voice? Yeah. The first thing that you would say is like, well, it was a man who was covering his face a robot called me. Unless he did a really weird Scottish-Irish accent mix. Well, it wasn't William, it was a madman.
William Wallace had planned and brutally murdered his wife.
How?
Why? Doesn't matter.
Why?
Doesn't matter. He did it. He's a husband. He did it. It was him. The jury agreed.
What?
Less than an hour of deliberation.
That was sandwiches.
Guilty. William Wallace will hang for the murder of his wife.
Good Lord.
Now, the defence are slightly, what the fuck? This was not how they thought this was going. There is no evidence. This is all bollocks.
This is circumstantial.
This is so circumstantial. And so we got experts saying he could not possibly have done it in this time frame.
No.
Your story just does not add up. But no, it was him.
Emotive.
It was him. They even looked at the insurance. Julia was insured for about £20, less than William had in his bank account, less than she had in her bank account that he had access to. There was no monetary motive for any of this. There were not that people knew of, any crosswords or disagreements between them.
No.
There seemed to be no reason why William would want this. But still, it was him. It's always the husband.
Bollocks.
The British media agree as well. They are reporting on this case going, what the fuck? The media petition for an acquittal. This is nonsense that this man has been found guilty like this. At appeal, William's lawyer ripped the prosecution to pieces. The timetable just does not fit. It is impossible. There is no way he could have physically been in the places he needed to be to commit the crimes that he did. He's been seen in other places. It just doesn't work. The prosecution now changed tack. They suggest that the Julia Wallace who had spoken to the milk delivery boy at 6:45, it's not the real Julia Wallace.
For God's sake.
It's not
right.
Her. She was already, Julia Wallace is already dead.
And it was a mystery woman.
No, it was William Wallace in drag. Putting on a fancy voice. It was him in his wife's clothes.
In his wife's clothes. The milk boy did not think anything
nope.
of this.
He was entirely convinced. Who is he to question?
Who is he to Who question is he a to man question? Standing there in drag? Yeah. I mean, today, do what you want. In the 30s, it was frowned upon.
Yeah. Thankfully, the court agree with you on this one. It probably it was unlikely to be William in drag, they think.
I mean, I kind of wish it was, and it was bad drag, that he had just put on a dress over his suit, and he had a beard and everything, and he went out and went, I'm Julia.
The appeal works.
Yeah.
Thank God. Yeah. The court overturned the conviction. The evidence is just not there. They actually say the jury got it wrong. The jury was wrong on this case. It's one of the first and only times that has ever happened in British history that a judge has said, you really fucked this up.
Yeah. Because normally it's, you know, okay, everything that was presented to you, you made the best judgment
you made
based
the best
on
of the evidence you were given. The evidence was faulty. The testimony was faulty. This time it was just, no, you just fucked this up.
Jury were all idiots.
Yeah, you're
I'm
all
sorry.
Idiots. You're persuaded by nonsense. William is released. Now, many in Liverpool, especially those who had known him, they never believed that William had been responsible for his wife's death. It just was not like him. He had no reason to. He tries to return to his old life, but is never the same again. He is never the same man again. He starts back at the Prudential, but he can't be going door to door now. Everyone is gossiping and whispering. People don't invite him in. Friends do. Fine, but new people, they've heard whispers, they've heard rumours.
Mm.
No one asks him in, he's not getting a new business. His health begins to deteriorate, the stress of not earning money, not being able to keep up the house. His wife's just been brutally murdered. Everyone thinks it's him. No one seems to be looking for anyone else.
Yeah.
He's not doing well. He resigns from his job and he moves out of Liverpool. He moves to the Wirral. The Wirral, a nice little peninsula.
Yes. It's worth explaining that to people not from England, because that sounds like Narnia to most people.
It's an area to the west of Liverpool on a little peninsula between two rivers.
The Wirral.
But even there, the rumours and the gossip follow him, and it's known. William dies 2 years later, 2 years after the murder of his wife. Police never identify any other suspects for the murder of Jane Wallace, and the case remains unsolved to this day.
Oh, good Lord, Nick.
There we go.
Da, da, da.
Terrifying. Unsolved mystery.
That's very disturbing.
Of the murder of Julia Wallace.
That is... Yeah, I can't work that out.
I mean, some people still think he did it.
Oh, there's a little bit of me that wants to pick that apart. Has there been no other suspects?
There have been. Later on, not official suspects, not through police channels. This case is hugely popular. It is
yeah.
Many people investigate and write books and research it. And over the years, there have been other suspects put forward by writers. P.D. James, she wrote an article in The Guardian about she had solved it. And also a number of other suspects have come to light. And we are going to have a look at those suspects over on Patreon. We're going to have an episode on who those suspects are. I say, no one has ever been charged. No one has ever been officially found guilty. So we will leave it to... Well, I will leave it to Sinead and to our listeners to discover who they think is the most likely culprit. Was it William Wallace? Or was it someone else entirely? We will never know for sure.
Yeah. Oh, good story, Nick. We like an unsolved murder. We like them, and also they bother me because I want to bloody well know. Yeah. I demand answers.
Yeah, so it's all just guesswork and people thinking, oh, that would work. And a number of authors and investigators coming up with theories.
But did William do it? This is what doing a true crime podcast does to you. Because everything you've laid out there, as a reasonable, rational, innocent human being, I would be going, no, obviously he didn't do it because the timing doesn't match up. But there's also the part of me that's gone, we've done a lot of murders.
Yeah.
And there's been some weird circumstantial evidence that's been proven right.
Yep.
The strangest things that you would say couldn't have possibly happened have happened. People have admitted it later on. So... Could he have done it?
I mean, I think...
Could he have done it? It's a brilliant piece of crime. Made that call and then slipped in and slipped out and he timed it perfectly.
I mean, with the timings, I suppose you've always got to allow for people's recollections because this is obviously only happening a few days afterwards.
That's a really good point.
So even if people are a couple of minutes out, if five people are a couple of minutes out, then someone's gained 10 minutes type of thing. So it's, it was around... And this is before digital watches and everything. So it was around 5 past 7.
Yeah, not everyone's going to have a wristwatch.
Not everyone's going to have a wristwatch. It's, I heard the church bells. It must have been around that sort of time.
You do your rounds as a milkman.
Yeah, it's not precise. It's all very about-ish. Was there the possibility that the timings were that a bit vague and a bit not quite as accurate as they have been sometimes portrayed? That he did, in fact, have that time? The milk boy says, 6:45. Was it more 6:40? That's 5 minutes.
Yeah, had to say the certain time because he'd been slacking or something. Yeah.
Potentially.
Two questions. Mm. The bigger question is why?
Well, yes, absolutely.
But let's come back to that. The second question, maybe related to the why, did he have an accomplice?
That is a very good question.
I mean, you can be someone completely different. You can orchestrate and set up the murder of your wife brilliantly, be seen by multiple witnesses, but why was she killed? Why wasn't this just a robbery? Why not just a robbery?
Yeah. What did she just interrupt someone?
Yeah. Was she out?
Was she upstairs? She was poorly. She had been in bed. She came down. She wanted a glass of milk or something, or she wanted a...
She'd gone out for a walk. She had, she maybe not been seen. Had her Macintosh about to go out.
Interrupted and someone.
And someone's stolen the insurance money. Mm. So is that just all it is?
Is it as simple as that? Is it simple, wrong place, wrong time?
And if the police had not honed in on William, they could have found the killer.
Maybe.
If they had stopped just going, it's the husband, that's easy.
We will discuss some of these possibilities.
Because
there are a few thoughts on such things.
Oh, wow. Very famous case, though.
Indeed.
Very famous case. And yes, and used in a lot of legal practice. Ooh, that's interesting. Oh, no, but I want to know. I want to know, God damn it. Maybe he did run that fast. When you were saying earlier on about how he was asking everyone where this street was, I felt like that was the lady doth protest too
well
much.
Yeah, absolutely. He was asking the tram drivers, he was asking was he there trying to establishing,
yes, holding a pocket watch or a grandfather clock, yeah, as he was walking around going, yes, does anyone know where this non-existent road is?
And that is something that came up at the prosecution. Why everyone he bumped into, he was like, do you, I'm this person, I'm looking for this place, do you know where it is, do you have the time, all this sort of thing. So,
but then again, back in the day, you would ask everyone. It's a scary thing these days to stop someone in the street and ask for directions. Back in the day, Nick,
you would,
you did it all the time.
And other sort of witnesses who came forward like for him said, No, he was always very punctual, very punctilious. He always liked to know what time it was with his appointments and his meetings.
But he
was
always a bit of a clock watcher.
He had a watch, absolutely.
But he was asking
He was asking people, he was making note of the time. I've got to be somewhere at this time.
Because your pocket watch, didn't you have to wind it up?
So he was like, that was his nature, was to be like that.
Oh, it's perplexing. It's an unsolved mystery, people. What do you think? Do you know the story of William Wallace, the potential murderer, not the Scottish legend?
Not the Scottish man.
not that guy. Do you have thoughts? Do you have theories about what happened? Please do share them with us and on social media, in the chat, of anywhere that you listen to this episode. We are going to cover some of the suspects over on Patreon, where we like to delve a bit deeper into some of the cases that we've covered. You are welcome to join us over there. It is but $5 a month for Deadly Nightcaps, and it's completely flexible as well. But most importantly, when we think of this story and the chess pieces maybe falling into place, but apparently not, because it's unsolved, they're all over the board. Mix yourself up a black and white daiquiri.
Oh, dude, it's damn good.
I mean, that went down very quickly.
It went down really well. I can imagine sitting in a garden, slightly
Stop
autumnal.
Stop saying that.
Slightly autumnal, this one. It's not perhaps not a summery drink. It's the end of summer into autumn.
I could I'm see this as a that. Christmas drink.
I'm really, really happy with that. I like it a lot.
It's very nice, and it does make a smile.
It does make, yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, the recipe will be out on Friday. Definitely try and give it a go. It's got a few weird things in. Go and get them. It's great.
Mix up that cocktail or any cocktail when you listen to this episode. Please tag us in photos of you enjoying them. Send them to us or tag us on social media. We'd love to know what you're drinking. Look forward to dissecting some of the potential suspects on Patreon. So if you want to join us on Patreon, please do. It's completely flexible as a platform, but that's the extra Deadly Nightcaps episodes that we do. It's a great time to join. The start of the month means that you get access to all of our back catalogue and everything that's coming up this month. If you are joining the Cyanide Connoisseurs, which is the higher tier, you'll also get access to the Case Files of PC Morris, a monthly episode looking at the weird and wonderful news from around the world. And please leave us a review on Apple iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcast. If you haven't left a review yet, take 2 seconds just to hit the 5 stars if you think we're worth it, and leave a nice comment. We would really, really appreciate it. Thanks for listening, guys. We have been the people inside the poisoner's cabinet. We will see you next week. And remember, your loved ones are trying to kill you.
Bye.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.